which was a full company-like structure with a board of executives, non-executives, and having the director of the PAA report to the board, and the board getting full power in terms of oversight of the NC as such. Whereas the bill that we have in front of us is set out in line with what, according to the different models that we have, where the PAA will be responsible for safety and security oversight, obviously the director has to be the person who is the head of the PAA and provides that function for safety and security oversight. The board role was more in terms of corporate government, ensuring compliance, public finance banking, etc. And one recall, we did mention that the FAA asked for clarification in terms of will the board be responsible for managerial and corporate government issues and how we are responsible. Suffice to say, following our last meeting in this house, we then went back and we consulted with different stakeholders. We had a meeting with Weber Wenzel and Hartwell and DC. We also met with the chairperson of the board, as well as we had discussions with the director of the CAA and other stakeholders as such. Now, to be still of the view, even though we had a discussion document in front of us, I still view that the board must constitute of a number of parties involving industry, which is one of the issues in industry raised, and we don't have the problem yet. And the constitution of what must compromise people that have financial skills, human resources skills, and we can have one of the bar council stages. At least one member should have air transport pilot license as such, as well as an organized state or some industry. So we're quite comfortable, I think we need grounds on that part in terms of composition of the board. With regards to the way the structure is set out, we agree that the authority is the sum of the parts, if I may put it across. That is the civil relation authority, being the board, the director, and the staff of the authority. So we understand that, and we don't have a problem with that. With regards to the director and his role, as set up in the Act, we fully understand that the director must be appointed by the minister. And the debate we've been having earlier on is that my colleagues on the board believe that the director should be appointed by the minister, but on recommendation by the board, after the board follows the process. Now, we see no harm in having a process within the Act where, similar to how we have to go down by advertisement and names come through and selection goes through. It's quite transparent, there isn't any problem with that. The director's reporting line, though, in line with what the national agencies around the world require, given the very virtue of his position, requires where he has to make determinations on safety and security oversight, requires that by virtue of the fact that the minister makes regulations, he has to keep the action of the minister regarding the regulation, and he has to have the direct and contact with the minister. And we discussed this earlier with the Weber Wenzel, and we came up with the FAA audit, which we haven't really penciled in quite well in the book, which we once penciled in the one liner, which allows the director what you call an urgency clause, that in the event something happens, he can bypass the carve-out process which we discussed previously and get a regulation put in place to combat it, the emerging threat or whatever it is. However, piggyback onto that, the urgency clause would be that when the level of threat is subsided or given, then we have to go through a consultation process before it becomes a final piece of regulation as such. So we agree with the way we went through that proposal. Now, in terms of the structure, which is the object and the functionality of the CAA, the object, both I think my colleague on the board, Weber Wenzel and us, we see eye to eye with regards to what the objects are and the board should, by virtue, provide oversight on the object as such. We don't believe the board should be involved in the control of the CAA, because I think that's where it starts leading on to the operational team of the CAA. If we recall, we made reference in the original bill to the corporate governance issues, to the strategies revolving around human resources, to remuneration, etc. We believe that the board's role should be as such. The director should not in any way be impinged upon in terms of execution of his duties, and it must be a very clear definition of that responsibility. And that's our position.
That's it.
Well, the intersection right in front is an exception of the case of the number of Kilmer. We go to part 2. This is section
17.
Yes, it's a discussion document. I'm going to talk to you similar to our
discussion.
Yes.
very, very light discrepancy. And then the detail is the narrative. This is why I'm saying we never can compromise.
Yes, I think you quite right on things. So you will have to take a discussion document, and I refer to the earlier bullet, and that way the field delineates in terms of what the points are for the national compliance, so the corporate governance and the administration of the CA will be under the board. Functional issue in terms of decision security oversight to be done by the authority, which is the director of the authority.
So we're ready in the midst of a commercial discussion for the moment rather than a detailed structure. And I think that's what we need much all at once, but the only way we can get forward is to reach the option. And not to produce a hybrid, because keep wanting to produce hybrids, I think, to try and accommodate different forces, and then I think that's the worst option. I think we need to make clean choices and then stick with them. It's not what they will do. And basically, three options are that you have a board that is responsible basically for the CA. This is what the A and the C are leading into, and then as we turn the page, it leads out. So that's the one.
I think much of the things that we are finding ourselves in jail is just this business of climate separation. I think last time we had some other explanation, but now just to try and separate those two, I think that is almost the source of all our problems. I'm still not convinced why we separate. If the director is mandated by some particular provision to speak to the minister on certain issues, then let it be, but really this is going to create us a lot of things, because we're separating on piece of paper, because we still want to come out on a constitution on financial issues. The director and the board, they've got the same set of officials that we need to deliver the sentences. But we still want to come across a lot of things through this government. I'm not sure whether we interpret something correctly, that the sentences are coming from that the director is going to the board, because if we resolve that particular matter, our job is going to be quickly being done and find a way of how we satisfy that particular provision in the recommendations of our cow or whoever has made that kind of recommendation.
Basically, the first option is you have a full brand which operates like the board of Transnet, looking on the entire solution to the regulation authority. And the board would then bring forth the policy. That would be the format. The reporting line would be essentially into the board, which would be the overall, have an overall responsibility. So that's one option. The second option is you don't have a board. Because we're not, because it's not transnational, we're dealing with a regulator. It's not a corporate entity in terms of part of the international market, trying to return a dividend to shareholders and so forth. It's a regulator. And the third option, which is the one that we began with in the original bill, is we have a board, but the board is there to look after the corporate governance aspect of it. Those are the three options. I think we should try and find the solution. Decide what it is that the president and then now, if we start with, if you go with the truth, which is a full blooded form, then you have got the issue of a continuum. So the proposal we're getting is that there might be a situation in which the director would have a right and requirements of people directly along with them through or you meet of the board or whatever to them.
You know, it's good that particular provincial exam, but with the provincial that the next meeting after the broadcasting of the vote, then the vote can be taken after speed, you know. And then we can have the vote to be accountable for the total authority of what's happening financially, efficiency in terms of delivery of services. Then the vote can take some kind of accountability. That's what I would say. We can have a good idea.
I think it's covered. But Chair, I want to check if we have any stubborn director who does not want to take anything from the board, who just want to be accountable to the minister. What will you do with that board? What will we do with a particular director? I think we must not set a precedent of saying the director will account to the minister. We must be very consistent, like all other posts that we have been dealing with. Like you have said earlier on the transmission and so on. Chair, I want to be precise that you can't have a director whose line of function will even at some point want to not listen to the board. I think if we can take that particular route of drawing a line that says the director will be only accountable, not necessarily be only accountable to the minister, but will have that straight line, I'm sure it will be very bad. And my proposal therefore is for that the director must be accountable to the board, because the board will be accountable to the minister. And the other thing, I've been listening to this argument for some time now. You know, I don't know this Akayo, whether it is the strength and nothing can change what Akayo says. We have power here, Chair, as members of parliament. We must be able to take decisions. And we can't be stereotyped and talk about our kind, even if it's not necessary. And therefore we propose that no director will account straight to the minister, but the director must account to the board. And it must be consistent. We can't make laws that are conflicting with each other. And that is basically my proposal.
In my own mind, where the problem lies in the current situation, and we haven't heard anything from the board itself, which I think is going to give us a submission tomorrow, did you say?
No.
What you mentioned in the beginning, that there will be some improvement. But needless to say, it would be interesting just to find out from the president incumbent in CAA as to where they see the conflict of what their roles are. Currently, where they are actually wearing the cap of a CEO, say, of the board, the CEO of the organization on the one hand. On the other hand, now assuming the responsibility for aviation security and incidents and accidents, like a commissioner, isn't that the word that was used, I think, previously? And just to see whether, you know, that needs to be separated in some sense. This is, I understand the department. Try and avoid that situation where there's one person holding two caps, am I correct in saying that? Well, anyway, I would like to get that sort of input and see what is being called for, certainly by the FAA and kind of respect of that clear role of responsible separation. And then maybe we can judge from that and how that can be fit into the model that's in the report. Is there a problem?
It's a good addition, Chair. I really do not know the intent of the director to have a direct link. But what I can just craft in my head is maybe there are issues relating to And then if that is the case as well, so why shouldn't we consider some vetting of those board members so that then they actually be on the same par as the other? And then it doesn't become problematic when it comes to issues of failure.
Thank you, Chair. I think as a board, we in fact we should reflect that I think from the initial stage when the bill was crafted till today, I think there has been a lot of progress. I know the Chair in fact has been able to point three scenarios. I think there's phenomenal. Number four, in fact, talks to the established rules in a normal, when we talk about corporate governance, Chair, we're talking about accountability of the institution to the accounting body. In this particular case, it would mean the board accounts to the minister, part of corporate governance. The CEO, the director, then accounts to the board. Because I think we're trying to create a sort of like a fuzzy distinction between corporate governance and we then limit it to HR and finance. It's not true. It's not correct. That's not okay. So I think with the colleagues from the industry and I think from the department, we've been able to narrow that down and agree that the board's function will be as outlined. Number two, in the main, the board will look at the setting up of the strategic direction of the organization and provide an oversight functionality to the implementation of the strategy. I think we have agreed on that. That's why the particular section C then become pertinent in this particular regard. The issues of operational management. The board does not get involved in issues of operational management. That's why I even said to my colleagues that immediately when you are a board, you do that. You will not be able to hold the CEO accountable because he will say, but you're part and parcel of the day-to-day management. So the board's function in the main is the strategic direction and oversight. That's why the other board to myself in the functionality of the board, for me, I would submit that you can just get rid of it. Those are two main thrusts, the main two functions. Then the other one would be the compliance of the PFMA because it would mean the analysis of the board. So for me, those things become very fundamental. The third submission that I would want to make is that if you look at Section 72, the Section 72 says that, Section 1, the Civil Aviation Authority has the function to conduct safety and security oversight on the aviation. Then the other mode is the mechanism how you do that. But now, immediately when you say that you've got a board that does not pronounce itself the issue of security, safety and security, then it means that that whole Section 72, which is in the main, the body, of what the authority is about. It means you strip it off, it's more like a dummy board, effectively. So what I'm saying is that, in this particular case, the board, in its provision of the strategic oversight, all what it will do would be to say, is there a security plan? And how are the mechanisms to implement it? The authority, the administrative staff, does it day to day. On the board, next meeting, say, after a particular period of time, 3 months, it will say, let's review the strategic implementation. Say, has it been effectively implemented? That's why I agree with the view that says that on issues of emergency, we need to be able to give authority to the director to interact with both the chair of the board and the minister in an event there is an issue of emergency without convening the full board. You know, you be able to give that organization issues of emergency to say, you know, you could interact with the director and the minister in terms of implementing, you know, immediate decisions. I think as a board, we do not have fundamental problems with that. The other limitation as well, which I think we're coming very close to that, in the board taking in the overall oversight, which is safety and security, it's also for practical reasons. Practical reasons in the sense that when you sit and drawing a budget in terms of allocation of resources, how as an institution will be able to say these are X number of or X amount of money needed for that particular activity if you're not involved in the setting up of the place. So it's also a practical issue in terms of resources. But second as well, in terms of the performance agreement of the current incumbent business director, you should be able to evaluate him in the totality so you're able to remunerate him fair. My last observation on this particular issue, Chandra, you also do not want to expose a political head in issues of this particular nature, because you may have a situation where the director says, but I briefed the minister. There's a big crisis now. That minister briefed you. The minister's got other issues that he deals with. That's why there's a dedicated capacity to be able to deal with this particular issue. So and he deals with them on a continuous basis. So I think our submission is that particular regarding that, and I think we need this right to make the submission in this particular case. And the other issue, of course, that I think we are more or less coming closer to each other is that we agree that in line with the travel agency's amendment law, it provides that the administrative head of the institution, would be recommended, to the political head. In this particular case, simply put, our submission is that the board will recommend the appointment of the director to the minister. Who is the minister will be the one that makes that particular appointment. I think we will be coming closer to each other in that particular case. So, Chair, that is like our submission that has been regarded. And I think with the industry and the department, we are coming closer to each other in this situation. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm
hearing,
of course,
thank you, Chair. To remind everybody briefly where we came from in our first submission, fundamental concern was the various senses of power and wisdom. So as far as, we've always seen the board of limited authority of the hybrid model that you mentioned, the fudge and compromise. Now there should be a full board, which is no board at all, because then there are clear lines of authority. In response to a question from the honourable member earlier, I mean, the international agency, it's not that they say it must be called out, They're saying who is responsible to take prompt action. And that's the principle. I suppose ultimately who's doing it doesn't matter. It's got to be clear, and at the moment it's still in, although we've moved, if you notice, effectively from the multiple centres of power far closer to what certainly we believe and we support the CIA, a full board model like any other board. I don't really see it as a fourth option. I just see it as option one, boards do what boards do. And really that is, just to reiterate.
The wrong person to
could be abused in a manner that was not in the interest of the other. So we would support the program and all of the when the four agencies were first formed, I remember discussions with Mr. McMahon at the time, and he said they want to commercialize them all, take them away from government, and run them on commercial lines with a commercial board, commercial funding, and to have a better relationship with the aviation industry than what it had at that time.
I mean, that you want to make a relationship, absolutely, but why is the word commercial? I would think you want a good regulatory premise on safety and security public issue concerns, and not, where the transport board obviously is about the commercial interest of the shareholder and the trend. Different reality. So, yeah, I know this is awkward, but I'm intrigued to hear a little bit more why. That's the one good relationship with private stakeholders and solutions. No problem.
Chair, I think the reason for the commercialization was based on the application of the user pay principle to the funding for the CAA. And I think the prevailing idea in government was to establish an arm's length regulator away from government on the user pay principle, where the industry funded the CAA, and therefore the industry, because they were the funders and government wasn't funding, should actually have a say in how their funds were spent and the level of service that they received from the authority. And I think that was the rationale at that time.
Knowledge and expertise and so on in that sector is absolutely
that that isn't all knowing and all seeing, and you want to see it happen. But in terms of critical areas of safety and security, you don't want the conversion. That's the one I'm asking. Why have we evolved in the direction of making a safety and security regulator? Why is it commercial? I think that the correct answer on top of it, we were doing that across the board in the mid-1990s. And we weren't alone, okay? In the UK, they haven't had what they call green list gardens because they created a million commercialized entities, or pretend commercialized entities, on user patrons and so on. And they're realizing that they've got incoherent. Okay. So that's part of the reason why at that stage, because there and in some other places, and it worked quite well in some places, let's be honest. So I think arguably with a trend making something like that, in my view, was very wrong, therefore we need to understand it. And maybe we're trying to make policy. You know, this is almost something that government needs to do a comprehensive review of. And we're dealing with it in one hand. What are we trying to do with our public utilities like Royal Commission Corporation, which is not going to be profitable here, people like it. They're profitable or potentially profitable like then they're regulating something of a diversity of kinds. And they're not all just corporations, they're all just have all the same. And that's what we've got to get into here. We're going to have to make some kind of political choice, because we can't defer. Sorry, I'm getting the wrong people. I don't want to, but what I'm trying to say is we are trying to define people, understand, empower ourselves to make a certain decision. And we know that people will be very careful, because we're also hearing that a lot, I think, coming, I think, more from the side, that no comment is not a clear direction. On the contrary, but we need to be careful, because maybe we've said before that you can get rogue names or even have referred to anything, one or even. You can get a seriously problematic character. And you can get commercialization in other ways as well. So we need to be able to monitor, check, very closely. And the number who best does it in this case? The minister and the department, section of the department that plays a wizard of all. In this case. I think that's what we're doing. The numbers of hands going up there is provoked everybody.
I think you know the issue at hand. Our interpretation as a board is quite clear and ambiguous. The issue of safety and security is the issue of public safety and security. We're not ambiguous about that. But the comment may have commission interest. We are the commission. And the comment may have commission interest, but our interpretation is safety in the public interest. I think also our understanding, Chet, is that why you did that also need a more athletic sport in that particular is because you would want a situation where even people who are appointed to the board, even going far, we're progressive people. That's why the minister has already in terms of appointing them. But also a situation where you've got an entity of accountability beyond the individual, right? And also this particular entity which becomes the board can actually be able to plan and execute the strategies in line with the broader thinking. We know that outside this particular meeting chair there is a bigger debate in terms of how can we make sure to plan properly at the state, you know, outside this particular meeting. So So it doesn't require that kind of a thinking where, you know, you are able to set up all the strategic goals as a country, with particular institutions playing particular roles and allocating resources accordingly. So then these particular mechanisms that we created, on the one hand, to ensure that they are also in line with the ethos of accountability, which is part and parcel of our democratic representation, but secondly as well, to make sure that while you foster this element of accountability, you do not divert from the fundamental objective that we should be supporting the UN. Simply put, we say that it is important that you have proper and effective structure of government. They are good to service them. And in this particular case, that's why our submission is that we do need to, in fact, as it is happening, throughout the country, even, in terms of the Congress government, trying for a day-to-day functionality, let's see all the developments. Then of course the board, which does the oversight and strategy setting. Then of course the political head, which is the minister that the board accounts to. It's very clear. Now what you do is that you then provide all the circular, you vet all the levels with relevant power. For example, as I indicated, the day-to-day, with the director, not interfering, the board, strategy, setting, and policy overview, or in fact, strategy overview, and oversight. The minister finally found the consequences. So by so doing, Chair, I think you find it really easy, in fact, to make sure that if the fundamental aim of the CEA is safety and security, then we need to be able to provide all the relevant there, the necessary capacity, in fact, to do that. I don't think that we could have a situation where we do not have a board. I think it would impact that too much power into an individual, which I think correctly has been saying that we're trying to move away from that. We can't keep this kind of power accountability. And safety and security for part of the board, not negotiable within the public interest.
Chairman, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to come back to the user phase. The user-based principle is an international civil aviation organization, or ICAO, fundamental principle for all member states around the world, that the airlines are paying for the services that they give. Now, most countries around the world used to have the safety and security services provided by the state through their respective departments of transport. That's all moved away, and most of them are now got the type of agencies that we have. And if we now go back to a situation of the directors reporting directly to us, it's a backward step, not only in terms of South Africa, but on a global scale. We're moving backwards, we're not moving in the direction of the aviation world is moving. And that's really part of the commercialization.
Okay, we don't mind the things that pain. But does the user get to say that as well? If you're looking across the board via, because that's what you're saying. That's the next step. That's what you're saying. No taxation without representation kind of thing. No user pay without the user also having some kind of threat in the process. Which I'm not implying.
Developing regulation, developing policy, and so on, rather than the oversight function, because the board keeps repeating that all policy setting and oversight and strategic setting. Now, how is that different from what the government is? It's not just that the final of the minister, final of the care of the can, ultimately, and so on. We're calling in this legislation for the department to be very active in developing regulation. To develop a security program, amended, adapted, and so forth. We're calling on to do all those things. Okay, it's not just the final end of the chain, with the bus stop. So, yeah, there may well be an important role for a board, something between that, but
but there's also the potential that we're not quite sure what the board's doing and what the department in that mix of paper science and policy development and so on. But it's a whole level of that. But you just take the point that we certainly want the humans to be paying for this EAA. And we can understand that the users are going to want to have some leverage on this entity for which they're paying good money, no doubt, and make sure that their good money is not being squandered by some despotic director or whatever. We can understand that argument. How do we get public interest right in all of that? Because we're not intended to do it. You? And sooner or later, we're going to have to.
The original was sort of understanding of the commissioner as he was and the role that he or she would play in the Civil Aviation Authority. Now, I assume it's because one doesn't want to see the same hat wearing, you know, in the judge and the jury, but if within that organisation there could be, and you have a reporting function upward to the minister from the CEO of the CAA, within his organisation, or the organogram of the Civil Aviation Authority, there is a safety and security department, which effectively has a director, that would be able to act with certain powers, as has been possibly muted by my colleague at the back, in order to deal with those elements of safety and security. Because I understand that because it's government to government type liaison, that grouping that you mentioned there of the security council, which you get the director, the department is already represented. And then one has to have then someone else who is part and parcel of this process to be able to keep a tab on what's going on so that they can at least keep everything under one roof. The role also of the department, as I see it, in terms of reporting to the board in an ex-officio manner, is also there. So is there any reason, can somebody explain to me why there can't be an all-embracing role of this director within the Civil Aviation Authority?
First of all, I'd like to make it very clear that I'm not advocating either for the board or against the board. I don't think it's the role of the CA to determine that. I think that's the position that would be taken. What I'd like to try and do is maybe give a little bit of background and a little bit of pulling in of the difference between aviation and possibly some of the other entities that we're involved in. South Africa was one of the founding signatories to the various conventions, the Chicago Convention in particular, in which international civil aviation was founded. And it's different to other conventions that relate to maritime and cross-border type of activities because of the nature of aviation, the ability to move hundreds and thousands of people cross-border with all of these things on the security. And as such, ICAO was set up as a body to set international standards which could be applied uniformly throughout the world to regulate civil aviation in particular. And the other forms of transportation do not have the same type of regulation that aviation does have. You don't have the myriad of annexes which we're required to comply with in terms of our signature convention. And to that end, in every country, you do have a civil aviation authority under various guidance. Smaller countries tend to follow the Department of Transport, or which may be related to some Ministry of Aviation. But the strategic direction of an aviation authority is very clearly set. It's set in the various conventions and it's set in the various ICAO annexes, and all countries legislate to ensure that those particular obligations are met. And the authority is required to implement those particular acts and regulations which are promulgated. So in terms of strategy, this isn't an organization which has to compete
in a commercial environment, which has to take a direction one way to ensure that it will survive against competitors. There's none of that, which is the typical function that a board has in an organization. It's there to ensure that the shareholder earning its dividends has a stake and increases its particular presence and role in whatever activity it might be involved in. The CA is a regulator, and I think Chair, you've said that on a number of occasions. And in carrying out its role as a regulator, it has two specific functions. One is to provide a service to the industry, which is related to licensing of pilots, licensing of operators, oversight in that regard, and providing essentially a service. And if that service is not provided, industry makes it known very clearly and very loudly that the CAA is not performing its function. The second part is that precisely of the regulator. And in that regard, I think where the CAA has gone wrong over the years in various different pieces is that it has allowed itself, if you want to put it this way, to be directed by various elements within the industry. And that ICAO clearly points out cannot happen and must not happen. And the FAA in particular, in their various audits, made it very clear that the CAA had been defunct in many of its functions before, in that they allowed self-regulation by and large to take place. And that is not allowed in terms of the international norms. And therefore, even the relationship with industry in the last year has undergone quite a radical change. For the first time, the CAA had the ability to act without that particular sword hanging over its head. We've been able to go into industry and do what should have been done right from its original creation. And I think in many cases did happen, and in other cases it didn't happen. But that really is the primary role of the CAA. It has to be independent. It has to be free of political interference. It's very, very important from that perspective. And the FAA, in carrying out its audit, really does what ICAO should have been doing. And ICAO, for the first time last year, in fact started a couple of years before that, started carrying out more of a watchdog function. Whereas previously it only really availed itself of setting standards. And the FAA set up their own audit scheme to ensure that the countries that flew from wherever they were into the United States were complying with international conventions. And when we received our confirmation of Category 1 status in July again, it was very clear the status is made that South Africa complies with its obligations in terms of the international convention. That's what they audited us on. And it's very important that the authority be allowed to do that. So that's the background to it. Whether or not a board is involved in that particular thing or not, as I said, I don't think it's for the CA to even say one way or the other which way it should go. But I think in the perspective of where we stand, everyone should be very clear that the role of the CAA is really predetermined, and that within the broader policies of the country, the effect of the national conventions or the international conventions will be upheld. And I think that's where the authority will get its direction from. And we fall in as an entity within the Department of Transport, and the interaction between the DOT and the CAA has to be continued virtually on a daily basis, because they are the custodians of that responsibility and obviously the minister. Thank you, Chair.
And maybe also just talk to us about some of the security aspects
have an independent accident investigation unit. When I say they're independent, they are funded by the Department of Transport. But from an administrative point of view, they reside in the CAA. So we pay the salary, and the department pays us on a premium cost recovery basis, and that is done from the national fiscal. Under the previous setup, the board had a safety committee which comprised various members of the board. That was disbanded following the directives of the minister. What we have created in as an interim procedure until the new act is promulgated is the safety advisory board. So the safety advisory board has just been appointed. They will meet on a regular basis. They consist of members of industry with sort of background that we're talking about in the current bill. And the accident investigation unit conducts all of the accident investigation. Now, for the past number of years, they've been conducting all of the accident investigation, including really minor cases where there was nothing really to be achieved out of the investigation other than to say pilots mustn't taxi or enter the runway. Right? We've already modified that to say we need the accident investigation unit to concentrate on major accidents and major incidents as defined by ACAB, and there's a clear definition on that. They do that. They work closely with us, and when necessary, we will provide assistance, but they are independent in that regard. So the minute that we're notified of an accident having taken place, there is a permanent standby list that is published weekly. There are investigators in charge, and they dispatch to see the accident. If required, if they suspect that regulations have been transgressed, they will notify the CAA and request for assistance. At this point in time, we will then dispatch inspectors to the scene, either airworthiness guys or flight operations people, to assist. But generally, they go in and they conduct the investigation completely independently. And that's in terms of our cabin expertise, you know, that is required. With the formation of the new advisory board on a quarterly basis, or even every 2 months, the output from the expert investigation unit will be analysed by the experts. They'll act as a filter. They'll either accept the report or they'll send it back for further work. Once they're happy, it will be submitted to me as the current commissioner, because under the current act, that is the way the process has to happen. And then I'll take that as commissioner, I'll sign it off, and it will go for publication. With the recommendations that then come out of that, I take that and I take it to my executive and I say, we have now been tasked to carry out the recommendations. And we'll feed back to the advisory committee to say that we will adopt the recommendations as proposed, or we suggest that there are amendments to it, or we incorporate a couple of them together, and then have a feedback process in place. What we're doing really is we're gearing up for the new totally independent ASIP as it is proposed. And that's the way it works. But it is really that the CAA has to get involved on at the time of the accident. One case where it did have to get involved straight away was in the case of the nationwide accident, where an engine fell off. It was a major event. Immediately, however, this department had to go and investigate. There was a chance this might happen again. Right. And so ground or aircraft involved, and that's how the CAA is involved in accident investigation when it's appropriate. And it is a robust structure, and we believe that it will really set up a good working relationship going forward. Mr. Ghani has also indicated that once the new ASIP is in place, we will then sign a memorandum of understanding with them, which is what is international best practice. Australia has never, a number of countries have. So that's actually not paramount that we can protect us. We'll be doing that. Then with regard to the role of the Commissioner and the CEO, one of the major findings of ICAO, which was then echoed by the FAA in last July and August, was the fact that the Commissioner in the current Act has the legislative responsibility or the regulatory responsibility. But he didn't have any ability to carry out that particular responsibility. By combining the position of commissioner and CEO, the incumbent, which happens to be me, now has the ability to harness a team of people to put into effect what is sitting in the regulations and in the very thing. And I think that is really important difference from the general perspective. With regards to the security aspect, we have the NASC, the National Aviation Security Committee. The CEO/commissioner is a sufficient part of that, together with the head of aviation security. The security clearance takes anything up to 8-9 months, and I'm not sure that the previous board actually went through that full procedure as required. It may have been a cursory particular security procedure, but that's not required for the day-to-day oversight. And when we're talking security, the majority of the oversight actually vests with the airport. So what we do have is a team of inspectors that will conduct inspections at the various airports, either on a predetermined basis together with ad hoc inspections. And deficiencies will be filed. A corrective action plan will have to be put in place with a specific timeline, and that is then reported back to the NASC, which is the overarching body, and if necessary changes to the NASC will be made, and any interaction that has to happen with the other agencies like the executive.
Thank you.
Can I just make follow up to check whether the independence that has just been expressed, if people have a commission for their independence?
Just my understanding, are we talking about the investigation view? Accident investigation?
No, they are, let me put it this way,
the appointment of the head of the unit is done in conjunction with the Department of Transport. They are totally independent, and the use of these principles does not apply. So their salaries and the investigations that they carry are paid for by the state and are not part of the income that we receive from the state each month.
One more angle we can explore. I mean, that was, thanks very much. You should have said you very early. You help remind us that in a sense the CA is doing two kinds of things. It's principles of operation. Well, that's not the one of the principles now. The one is basically being the local regulatory entity implementing not so much South African government regulation, but international protocols, given the nature of the relationship, which you began by saying. We'd like to think that all kinds of forms of transport are cross border, but nothing is as cross border as aviation and on a large scale. And that brings its own advantages and challenges. And therefore, a great deal of the regulation that you have to uphold, implement, ensure that it happens and so on, are derived from international conventions, the same local relationship, often there is flow of and nothing to do with it, that means that. Then there's what you describe as being a service to the industry. I want you to think of the connect because licensing requirements in some of the taxes is fits in with the international standards and principles, but it does, it's more of a kind of direct service. And that's in particular what they're paying for. Well, it's not presuming that in general you have to cover all of the costs of the other two, in particular there's a service. But I'm going in this direction to wonder where the people the user might want to have some kind of service. Setting security standards and protocols, we can't do it. When we get to conventions, we just rather stand for the not going to get our job.
or the department for that matter, the national department for agriculture services. But there are matters where you're paying and you might feel that you're not getting the service that's required. And you want a handle on that. That I can understand and appreciate. You might feel that sometimes some of the regulations are done which are not empowered and come from highly specialized industries that somehow developed locally really didn't understand the aviation environment or whatever. That's why I talked a lot about the regulatory side and what's the question. But the other angle where you might want to come in is to have some kind of oversight as to how, but I need help. But you can see what I'm kind of pushing. Whether it's the formula or something else, but how the private sector stakeholders might want to have some kind of monitoring role and ability to say, we're not getting the service we want. But you say the shot, I'm sure it is, but many of them can't or can. But is there some way of institutionalizing that interaction? Is it a board? I don't know. Is it a camera? Can we go out? I can see. I'm attracted because you seem to be.
Well,
I'm
going to recognize.
Mr. Chair, I think in some ways I agree with you, in other ways I disagree with you, and I think also I disagree with some of the things that Captain Jordan said. I think I've had the advantage of working for the CAA for a good number of years and also being in the industry. So I know both sides of the fence. And I think, if I recall correctly, Captain Yudan said one of the problems with the CAA was that the industry was affecting the regulatory ability of the CAA. My impression is that has never been the case. If I had to diagnose maybe why the CAA wasn't ready for the ICAO audits and the FAA audit was due to management dysfunctionality within the CAA and not anything to do with the industry. From my knowledge also of the organisation, I can understand why you have the role of the commissioner on the one hand, who's really responsible for the safety and security aspects. And I can also understand why there's a direct line in terms of the current legislation to the minister on that aspect. And it also makes sense that when they created the arm's length standalone regulator, that they brought in the post of the CEO, and that the CEO would basically be responsible for the service delivery function of the CAA. I think, however, where they made a mistake was there's nothing in the legislation to say that the CEO works for the commissioner. There's no reference in the legislation for that, and I think that is a major oversight. And I personally think that you could sort out a lot of the problems, administrative problems in the CAA if you kept you separated the safety and security oversight role from the service delivery role. But you would have to have a hierarchy within the CAA, and that the board would then control the safety and security, service delivery side via the subordinate, who would be subordinate then to the commissioner, whatever you want to call him, the director. And I think that would sort out a lot of the problems. It would also allow the industry then to interrogate the standards of service delivery if they represented on the board their two representatives. I just wanted to check that there was, I think also this issue that Captain Yudan raised and the thing that ICAO raised about the commissioner not having the ability to execute the legislation is also a mistaken idea. Everything that the CAA does is done in the name of the commissioner. If a license is issued, it's issued in the name of the commissioner. If a certificate of airworthiness is issued, issued in the name of the commissioner. Mr. Chair, for what it's worth, that is my take on the situation.
Okay, but now I'm in the whole other can of worms. And yet,
pretty tenderly come. That's what I was saying.
Okay, let's go a bit forward.
We don't need that up.
No, I think, you know, I think as a board, we, you know, quite clear on a few issues. The fundamental issue is that, as a board, we would want to have an effective regulator. An effective regulator. A regulator that can ensure that our airspace, our air travel is safe and sound. I think that's what I'm already doing. And being informed by that, Chair, is that we are not in fact confused in terms of what the role that the board is supposed to do. The board doesn't determine policy. Cannot. The policy is determined by the department as well as informed by the initial protocol. That's the policy I'm saying. What the board does is that it then says on the back of these particular surroundings, policy surroundings, which is, what strategies would you want as an institution of the body policy? What strategies would you want to ensure that these policies are being implemented? You take a long term horizon, like 5 years. You say, this is our strategy for 5 years, it has nothing to do with competitive. Strategy for 5 years to ensure that we achieve A, B, C, and D in compliance with that. The functionaries then come out with the technical plan in terms of how to implement that. And I think as a board, we're quite clear. The role of the board then becomes the strategy setting and the oversight functionality. That's happening. And somebody can be held accountable. Secondly, I'm a bit in fact weary with the idea that says that then the board has to have a limited role. I think that is the challenge for me. You know, have an institution of our country with weaker power. Personally, Chair, I've got a bit of a problem with that. I believe that structures of accountability must be able to have stronger roles in terms of holding the individuals accountable. Not a weaker system, the weaker institutions of accountability. And I think we saw that with the collapse of the financial market, we were a weaker and regulatory role. What I'm saying in my submission is that that's why, as a board, would want the strategy overall as well as the oversight of our which includes safety and security. Well, the other mechanisms and measures, I think I've spoken about the option one, the third one indicated in the measures. And I think as well, Chair, is that even in the reviews as well, that were done by KO or FAA, there is in fact nothing that indicates that says that the director has to report to the minister. And our submission is later. All what it says is that there must be a dedicated capacity to ensure that they sound safe. So the long and the short of it, Chair, is that as the board, we're quite clear in terms of what role we want to play and want to make sure that systems in the industry work effectively with all the role players that are being involved. Thank you.
Being discovered into all the data by the honourable members because I think they're valuable input from the different stakeholders. But it's going to start off, I think we live in a perfect world with lots of imperfections. And we understand something, that these two audits we had last year came after us having at least four boards. That's a good exception. If boards work in a perfect world, then we wouldn't have these kind of results. But I'm not advocating that we need to have a board of CAA. I also want to make sure that we cover the fact that when the chair started the session and we reached out after my submission, you may mention to three different alternative options. And all of which should work. We have the opportunity of the service of having Virgo Wendel, and we worked quite closely last year when it came to the audit and to put the corrective action in place, and we explored a number of options. But one of the areas that we focused on and we find quite self-explanatory is that this is an industry that does not have to go and sell buildings or invest or whatever. It's got a very clear prescript from Akai, and that prescript is to provide a CRP and safety oversight. In terms of service delivery, all the entities give you guidance to different regulations and different standards and administrative practices. Very clear, definitive rules of how you play the gaming industry. So for a board that is 770, it would be the easiest setting to ever set because year in, year out, unless something phenomenal happens in the world, that set is double change. Maybe the same. With regards to the reporting line, and I heard the honourable members mention why it must be directly reported to the minister, and you're concerned about perhaps a power issue or an insubordinate issue with the board. Irrespective of what you may hear, what Akaya said, what SA said, I was part and parcel of the board process. I can assure you that both Akaya and the SAA want comfort that the person, the one person model that's responsible and accountable for that policy, is capable of making decisions and has a direct access line to the policy head that has appointed that authority. In this case, it's the minister. I myself personally went over to the state and I can assure this house that the administration for the FAA is not just a secretarial appointment, it's an appointment made by the president of the state. Likewise, in other states around the world, you have the Secretary of State, you have the Governor General, and we went through all these models. And they all have a direct line of reporting to that political head. However, that line of reporting is for one purpose only, and that is for the purpose of ensuring that the regulations are made in their own time and they are implemented and are effective. In terms of having the direct reporting line, also allows you with an urgency factor that when an incident happens in aviation, the time response is not to say, fine, we had a clean experience and investigate and 4 weeks down the line and take action. With aviation, aircraft take off almost every second during the day. The action that needs to be implemented has to be almost immediate. And that is the urgency rule that is applied in terms of reporting. It has nothing to do with regards to power, it has nothing to do with regards to the fact that I'm going to take a report to the minister and only report to the board. Because everything you do with providing the safety and security oversight and taking the action that is necessary immediately and on time. The FAA and ACAIO do not have a principal form that it is a board of business. They do not have a form. They have a form in terms of fines. One would understand, as I said, in 1999, and Tim said he worked many years for the theory, and I'm sure you could recall, this country went under court. And what I would not like to say was, I think, 9/11 overtook the 1999 audit. Had we not had 9/11, we would have been in the situation in 2001 had one of the problems been downgraded because we are not compliant. You kept it very well when you said that the commissioner is the one that's empowered, and yes, that's the 1962 Act, and the commissioner is probably the most powerful person in the state. Make no mistake about it, because everything that happens in regulation, every action that's issued is under the hands of the commissioner. You cannot get a license from the CEO, but you get a license from the commissioner. Someone in 1997, 1998, when the constructors had that by pure chance or oversight or by complete lack of understanding, created this entity called the Civil Aviation Authority in complete absence of the commissioner. And this interfaced with the board, with the CEO, and had a complete lovely business form, except it did not have the real business element enshrined within that authority, and that would be the commissioner. So no one had a commissioner with no staff, no revenue. The person that actually took pen to paper and said, fine, I'm giving you a license, and you can practically do nothing without the actual authority. And that is the beginning of our problem. And as we led towards day from the past, you found that boards were inconstant, and perhaps maybe boards in the paper the day to day. I can't really confirm it, but what I can say is, given the evidence that we had in the end of, or towards the middle of last year, and the position that the CA was, the word that we catch is dysfunctional, some days are quite clear. I think our purpose and what I would implore upon the House is that whatever direction we take going forward is in the next 5 to 10 or 15 or 20 years, we cannot afford to have a dysfunctional CAA. When it's a one-man role model, or whether it's a board of CA, whether it's a CA with a board, whether it's a CA with a partial board, whatever the model is, it has to work to ensure that there is international compliance. Thank you.
No, sir, I expected that the department is going to talk to one of the because I have indicated that why don't we have a big board and we have the director, and for purposes of those higher requirements or whatever, and then the director is exempted or that he's been power to talk to the minister, but in the next meeting of the board, they increase the board or increase the board up to speed with what has happened, and still remains accountable to the board. I thought that we were going to speak to that and give us what would be the difficulties, because this is like our major problem is this division between the director separate and running his own business, the other side of the board running some other fictitious business. And that's where our problems are lying together. I was just trying to combine them to a normal board that we know. But with the provision for the director to be able to comply with that other requirement from outside, whether that is workable and whether there are any difficulties with that. How do you think you talk about that?
I think that's where the fear in the kind of
Chairman, thank you. I want to come back to what Captain Yodan was saying and the exception of the one qualification from Captain. I agree with everything Captain Yodan said. Don't have any disagreement. But in particular, I'd like to mention the issue of the role of the Commissioner and the CEO. As a former member of the previous board, the Civil Aviation Authority, we recommended 3 years ago to the DOT that they should merge these two positions. It never happened. And then it became an imperative right towards the very end. But it was a recommendation. But I think there are only 3 countries in the world, according to our research at the time, which still have commissions and CEOs. You know, it's Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. Everyone else has moved away from it. Now, I also would like to remind us in Africa, we have the worst safety record in the world. Our safety record is 5 times worse than the rest of the world. In South Africa, it's as good as the rest of the world. And the rest of the world has moved over from a DOT responsibility for safety and security to an agency position, exactly as we have done in South Africa. The rest of Africa, and I'd say probably 95% of Africa, still has this relationship between the director and the That's the way it's done in Africa. The safety record is the worst in the world. And we don't want to go back to that situation. In fact, the rest of Africa is looking at South Africa and saying, that's the way we all want to go. So they want to model themselves on what we have done, achieved. And we're not talking about going back. So I would like you to take that into consideration.
Very briefly. Just to emphasize what Colin said, the CAA provides a service and also has a role in regulation, and in your comment, you're going to the policy issue of who regulates the state or some agency. But on any version then, you need a CAA for no other reason. So it's a service. And your question would then become, well, from a policy perspective, should it be regulated? That would be the question. As far as the regulation is concerned, I don't know, I wasn't there at the time the CIA was created. It strikes me that one thing that a properly functioning board, and I accept, you know, the board's not working properly, the solution is not necessarily to abolish it, but maybe to ensure that it does work properly. But a properly functioning board can fulfill all the requirements of the FAA and others, and it can also provide a good check and balance on a road director, I think is the terminology you may have used, and also structured properly, which the DOT themselves has suggested creates a mechanism for true industry participation, certainly which is appropriate as far as providing services to the industry is concerned, and possibly given the debate as far as regulation is concerned, because at the end of the day, those are the people who have every interest not to get blown up in midair, they have every interest to ensure the safety of their passengers, and they really should at least have the opportunity to participate in the regulations and the requirements that they have to comply with.
Thank you.
I would suggest, you know, that that's the right place to do it. The other thing, Chair, that I'm concerned about, and I'm just wondering, if the director is the only person currently who is able to rally the troops, so to speak, in terms of security, other affairs, does he necessarily have to be a government to be able to bring those people together? Or can he not be an appointed CEO of the aviation? I ask that in terms of some of the ways that that might be circumvented. If we have a director, for instance, within the CAA, is there any harm for that person to be able to have the same authority that you would have that person to be possible? I'm pressing that because if it does, then this also makes me feel a little bit more happy about the incorporation of full board, which would then have the need for a director in it, and also the CEO to run more business and affairs of civil aviation. So, can you just answer that first and then clear my mind? Does it have to be a government? Or can you actually empower someone within the CA to be able to do that? Because you could still have a director in the department, per se, that deals, as it does at the moment, with civil aviation aspect. Being an official, that's empowering the director in that board by virtue of him also being there to advise them of any security aspects, respect, courage, coordinate them across the board. I just would like that.
Thank you. I don't know if anyone might know this, probably Mr. Lang can review the document. I'll learn clarity and try to process. The first thing is the director and have the structure so one can understand the word director is not as assigned to what you have in public service. It's in director itself, it's completely separate. The reason why we are directing this story is when we did the document as well, we took a benchmark law to see what is appropriate for the way the industry is leaning towards in tightening the process as such. And the FAA calls it administrator, some people call it the director general, but the message throughout the world is leaning towards the director of civil aviation. And hence we have the director. So it's not a public service employee as such, private person. I think any military director, which we haven't really discussed in detail, once we look at all the issues regarding corporate governance and safety and security goals together. And the reason why I want to mention that it's important to also bear this in mind, especially for the future, is that you need to have a person running the authority who has at least four candidates on the shoulders. Basically implying that the person must be technically competent, allow them any one of us to do is jump on board an aircraft and have an accountant sign up the air license.
Okay, let's share. How are we doing? The kind of sort of three options, the middle one is no one's really motivated for this, which is no one can see there if you motivated for the third option either, begin to warm down a little bit from that.
address the board in considering the more than a forthcoming report. So that's another section that we can ask. Maybe that's the next step we can take, which is to have a look at what you're proposing in the discussion of an alignment meeting that you have. Personal formulation
Camera.
Generally, it's extremely difficult. I think that's the important part. The only question that I would raise about having a board is what if, I'm going to do a couple of what ifs. What if the board gave direction? What if the board put in place a performance agreement with the director, which in fact was at odds with the interests of aviation from a number of perspectives. First of all, in terms of international compliance. Secondly, in terms of serving the industry itself. And the director's remuneration and bonuses, whatever it is, was tied to that. You know, I have a conflict of interest that the board is directing to achieve a specific goal, and the independence is not. So that's the one question. How do you get around that? The second thing is, I think it's extremely important, as it is with selecting pilots, that you want to spend millions of rand training to eventually become a captain on your 747 or whatever, is that you need to select the right person. There's absolutely no doubt about that. If you have a person in the position of director who is the wrong person, you will have all of the problems that you're sitting with. Having said that, you might select the person who at the start of the whole process does very well and over a period of time goes rogue. How to deal with that? I think that's important. And I think that's what this legislation should be talking to, is the appointment process and, if necessary, the impeachment process. And I think it should be transparent, and I think it should be of such a nature that that Parliament, if necessary, is involved. And that would be my perception. Thank you.
Relationship that develops between those two incumbents, from the department directly to the CEO of the state of the
afford them sitting around the personnel or everybody else doing the various jobs there. But there's nothing then to say that that director can't go and talk to the minister. You don't call that a problem, speaking to the son and daughter. Because there's a normal, I was thinking you would apply to meet regularly with your minister. So what I'm trying to derive here is that whether that incumbent, that director, is actually a ministerial appointee, that actually is directly reporting, to the minister as he would normally do in matters of importance. And then at the same time liaising directly with the current incumbent responsible for the CNA. Is there anything that we need to draw up more simple than that?
They are often more than me, quite typically.
council members who are quite a bit better on. I mean, they were getting biographical, but I don't want to get there. But, I mean, that's one of the features that we see. That the regulations that we've talked about and that the asset about not attending to meetings of society, we've known that there's been huge problems with poor ratings, poor people just dropping out and so forth. Because they're there out of maybe because of some remuneration or some kind of commitment which comes and goes and comes. So I'm not sure about it. And I think there's a lot of questions to be answered. I should have taken one. So, that's the second kind of issue. Not to be held for that. Because I undermine where the career and teams are we have, which is going to be interesting. Okay, so I think we need to bear that in mind. But how are they really able to exercise the oversight role? I don't think that we're going back to Nigerian and people without being familiar with those practices. We want an agency, we want an independent agency. We don't want to turn this into part of it as possible. But we do want the dynamic interaction between this agency and the independent agency. And I like the thing that you say that the director needs to be protected. The director might turn rogue, but even the director probably is a minister. So you need to make sure that there cannot be any prejudicial undermining or influencing or safeguard that a really important. So I don't know whether in Zimbabwe or in Nigeria they have agents, civil aviation authorities, or whether they're just part of a department. So we definitely don't want to get back there. The end of the arm is so great that you lose the national interest capacity. Okay. I don't think we're going to get any further.
Chairman, I'm trying to, like you, find a compromise solution.
And you're saying, I'm not trying to say that.
I'm going through my mind that maybe if there is a kind of a dotted line between the director and the minister, that is a formal understanding that if the director then talks to the minister about issues, if there's no conflict with what the director has with the board, then there would be no problem in going to the minister. But if there's a conflict, disagreement between the director and the board, then the chairperson also has the right to join the director and the minister. So that both sides of the equation can be left in there.
Okay. I think, from my side, in fact, everything has said this discussion quite well. I think the way forward is the situation of making sure that the day-to-day functional, I would call it functional independence, of the authority is not compromised. But the strategic independence or policy independence of the organization is the one that in fact will be intended on, because the department has to be able to set a policy. The board has to be able to influence the strategic development. Typical as what happens with the central bank. I know some central bank has been that I'm trying to use a similar one. I'm trying to use that particular model. That the functional independence, the day-to-day, there's no interference. Not an interest rate, the government has all the right to do that. The same story, the director can be able to interact with whoever on issues of state and security, the effective functionality of the organization. I think one is comfortable with that. And secondly, you then have the food board, strategy setting, the oversight, make sure that I think it's not only the oversight on issues of safety and security, but also the functionality and the health of the organization, the regulation and so on. So the board will have a particular function.
You will have managing policy.
Precisely, we are pretty precise, something like that. Yeah. So that what will happen is that for purposes of appointing the director, well, the board will make a recommendation to the minister for their approval. What I'm trying to impact is
either.
Okay, or another story. So, in an event, then you spoke about the dynamic relationship. That's why I indicated that there shouldn't be anything that prevents the director to interact with whoever or any stakeholder on any particular issue in the interest of the organization. But where there are issues that there is a direct interaction with the minister, my suggestion is that. And I think that we suggested the other honourable members that I think that then there needs to be a full brief to the board in this particular meeting, or where there are issues of emergency, then so he can interact with the minister. You know, of course the chair of the board has to be involved, and in the next meeting that should be that particular person. You would say in brief check, it's just to simplify it. What I'm trying to say is that the director must not be prevented from interacting with the department or any other stakeholder in the execution of restrictions, quite clear. Where there are issues of emergency, transport emergency, or airline emergency, we should be empowered to be able to interact with the minister and also inform the chair of the board of this particular issue. And in the subsequent board meeting, then be able to provide the report in court. Reasonably, you imagine that the board would be having the oversight functionality, and that particular normal reporting will take place. And I think the decision will be in terms of the
Chair. Shall we
move
to the
Sorry, Mr. Chair. One problem that representatives from the industry have with the current model that we have for the CAA regarding fees. For ATMS and AXA, we have the regulating committees, the structures whereby the fees can actually be regulated. And although the industry is funding the CAA, there is no such model. Now, maybe if we were to consider moving away from a board, we could look at an organization that would look at setting fees, would also have a role to monitor service levels, and by monitoring service levels, deciding on bonuses for management and stuff within the CA. That might also be a way of going forward.
What is it that we want the user, the paying user, to have a voice on? And what is the best mechanism for achieving that? Because we do book. But I'm not sure if that's coming up in terms of the time pressures we're under. But I personally like that approach, because I do want to see the stakeholders having this role in engaging with this, but at the same time, I'm not sure that, I think I really have a more sure than I am, that a board is the best way of getting that engagement. I think we're kind of all repeating our but we're kind of all regurgitating. I think they've called it a day. Tomorrow, 10 o'clock. It's 12 days. It's better than the NCOP room. It's 12 days.